going to be relying on Mr. Self and Mr. Advocate Max and Gwenya and myself. There's not very many others that are going to join us. Absolutely not. Today we are going to receive a presentation on the quarterly report, the first quarter from the department. We've got until lunchtime at the absolute latest. It doesn't have to go until lunchtime. If we finish earlier, all the better. So again, NC and Ms. Reiner and Mareka, I think it is, you guys are going to be leading us. I'm not sure how much time you need, but we'll give you about an hour, more or less, if that's going to suit you guys. And we'll have an engagement around that. As step three of our preparations for the report that we must submit, and then next week we will meet with the various individual departments or sectors, Commissioner. But before we go there, just to indicate to you, Commissioner, and your department, that Tuesday, when we met the stakeholders, we asked the stakeholders not to regurgitate the problems, because we know them and they've been there all along. We asked them to rather focus on what it is that they think we should be telling you to do differently, as opposed to just giving us the story. And that is why you'd notice we never focused on things like overcrowding and those things. We knew those problems. So there are a few areas that I just want to raise with you as part of the summary of what stakeholders indicated and what we've agreed to as a committee, because there was no objection from our side. The first thing that I think that came out very clearly, and also even in our meeting yesterday, is that we think this department must find a way of expending its energy on hiring of more professional stroke medics. You know, the psychiatrists, the psychologists, and those type of things. We think that you just have to find a way of doing it and retaining them. We think, Commissioner, that you must find a way of addressing the vacancies in the financial sector, or financial department. And I was looking at your performance plan for 2011-2012. I think somewhere there you indicated that you would be filling quite a few vacancies by the second quarter. The third thing that we agreed to, emanating from the AG, was that we need to tighten up both the committee and yourselves. The monitoring of your monthly budget versus actuals. And reasons for the variances. So I think we will do that, and that is what we're saying you would need to do, sir. We also agreed, and I think it was raised again yesterday, that the department should ensure that Operation Valor doesn't negatively impact on oversight of operations in our facilities. We also were in agreement that if it hasn't started, it needs to start a comprehensive training of officials on the anti-torture principles, or whatever you call it, including the use or non-use of equipment. We agreed to that as a committee, on Tuesday, and we think that we should be bringing that to your attention. We yesterday also, I think, agreed in principle that there is a need to urgently reduce the reliance / employment of consultants in this department. and that we rather take those costs and invest them in staff so that there is retention of memory in the department. We also seem to agree with the AG that there might be a need, we're not sure, but there might be a need for the establishment of a compliance office. Maybe there is one, but an individual that would focus, or a structure that would focus on whether this department is complying with policy, focusing mainly on the Auditor General's management letter queries that are there. I think it was Mr. Abram or somebody that said, please help us. You said you've got an action plan, and we think that that office would be able to highlight if we are deviating from that action plan. So those are some of the suggestions that were forwarded or were discussed with our stakeholders and with yourself yesterday. So in your own inputs, if there are any of these that you would like to discuss, get clarity, disagree on, you have an opportunity to do so now. In the absence of that, that will be part of our reporting recommendations when we submit to the Appropriation Committee. The final thing, and I think it's continuously raised by the longer term member that served here on a longer term commissioner, Mr. Self and Mam Gwenya, is the need for stability of leadership. You know, yourself, even yesterday, on more than one occasion, indicated that I inherited, or we inherited, correctly so, because we've had a team that made commitments to Self and Ngwenya. After MT, it was Golisa, I think. After Golisa, there was somebody else acting. Peterson, Ms. Schreiner was there for a certain time. So every time somebody comes commissioner, they make an undertaking, and members remember that. So when you come, the members say, hey, but this is what we've taken. And I think the reason why some of them fall through the cracks is just the fluidity at leadership level. I've worked with correctional services quite a long time, even in my other life at Scopa. I think other than Jenny Schreiner, Mareka, and the lady behind you, yes, outside of those people, I'm not sure there are many others that I've interacted with at leadership level. Others might have been in the region at the time. So, and I did say a month or two ago, Commissioner, that in the corporate world, an 80% turnover would never be allowed in any company. And that company just wouldn't survive. So, I mean, those will be part of it, of our recommendations. But in your own input, if you find time to dispute any of these things, we would afford you an opportunity to dispute them so that it sharpens us as we prepare for our report. So those are the things that we thought we'd just highlight to you up front, and then hand over to yourselves to lead us with the presentations, and as per practice, we will then engage with it as we go along. Thank you very much, Commissioner, and your team. Is that acceptable, members, that we allow them to? And we thank you very much.
Chairperson and members of the Portfolio Committee, thank you once again for this opportunity. Allow me, Chairperson, but I'll make a comment on these issues at the end of our presentation. I would like also to make a request. Yesterday we promised that we are ready for the presentation on the shift patterns within the organization. And as you would have seen, every time we do have our own post-mortem about the meetings, we received an information yesterday that we would not be in a position, with your permission, to do a presentation because we are deadlocked with organized labor on the issue of shift system. We therefore request the committee to take note of this as soon as we are able to resolve this deadlock. Certainly from our perspective, we read yesterday when the team leaders in HR consulted, they were told that in the meeting that they had during the day, there were issues that were raised by organized labor. And of course, we'd like to sort those out as quickly as possible. But we want to make a commitment that when we committed ourselves yesterday, we're 99.999% sure that all issues were on board. So we'd like to bring the attention of the chairperson of the portfolio on this matter. Without much ado, I'll request my colleagues to do a presentation on the first quarterly report of 2011-2012, and therefore would like to do a seamless presentation, first on the performance information, and then followed by the financial monitoring and management side of the report. Thank you very much, Chairperson.
Chairperson, if I can take over then to do the presentation on the performance information. By way of introduction, this is the presentation on performance information of the first quarter. As indicated yesterday, we are in a process of addressing the weaknesses that have been identified by the AG in relation to performance information. We have used this report in our first internal quarterly performance review meeting. We have identified a number of the anomalies that the AG has identified on the previous financial year as still present in this financial, in this quarterly report. And we will ensure that in the second quarter and going forward we improve on it. So as we talk to this, you will see instances in which the report on the actual performance doesn't speak directly to the target. But those are issues that we have used in our quarterly performance review meeting. We have focused on those and indicated to the line functional managers that reporting against the indicator on the one hand and the target for that quarter is an essential element going forward, and we do hope that when we bring you the second quarterly report in November, some of those issues will be addressed. If I can then move directly to the first slide on the performance information. Can we move to the slide? In relation to the indicator relating to accurate, reliable, and timely data for decision-making, our first quarterly target in relation to that was the monitoring, evaluation, and reporting policy being reviewed. Apologies for our use of acronyms. I will speak to them as we go through, and we will ensure going forward that we avoid using them. The draft policy is available. It is in the process of being refined during that time period. The first leg of the logic review, which is an integral part of the review of the MER policy, has also been conducted in that first quarter, and a project plan to take that process forward was being drafted during that first quarter with a dedicated project manager on the monitoring, evaluation, and reporting project. In terms of the percentage of vetting of personnel, we had indicated as our target that we wanted 2% to be vetted. The presentation indicates here that no vetting took place. Now, I think we need to explain that. It's not that we did absolutely nothing. We had, during that first quarter, submitted the vetting forms. We had, during that first quarter, done a large number of personal suitability checks, which is what the Commissioner was talking about yesterday. It's the pre-screening. It's not the actual vetting. The actual vetting is a process that is completed by NEAR. And what we're reporting against here is whether the vetting has been completed. So that no vetting took place is no finalized vetting was received back from NEAR, but the processes have certainly been initiated with a target focusing on the Ministry Commissioner, SMS, and moving on from that process. The functional EPMO, Enterprise Project Management Office, the EPMO is functioning in terms of a war room, tracking the projects on a weekly basis and ensuring that we build on the best practices and we consolidate the governance processes within the department. So significant progress in terms of its functioning there. The governance issues are in the process of being addressed in that quarter. That's the Enterprise Project Management Office.
Chairperson, there's also my request. If the CDC speaks about MER, just explain MER what, so that we should know, because I didn't find the key to the acronyms.
Okay.
Chairperson, I did apologize for the acronyms. MER is the Monitoring, Evaluation and Reporting Policy and Project. EPMO is Enterprise Project Management Office, and I will do that as we go through because there are a couple of other acronyms that come up. Moving then to the corporate services, the filling of finance posts for the first quarter, our target was to aim to fill the level 14 and 15, that's your chief director and DDG level vacancies. And we had filled 5 posts on level 14, 1 post on level 15, and appointments were pending for 4 of the level 14 posts at the end of the first quarter. In terms of the bid for the funding of the approved post establishment, the first quarter work was to ensure that the preparation of that bid was done, and indeed the bid has been compiled. It's been submitted to the finance branch, bearing in mind that it's finance branch's responsibility to submit it to Treasury, but that is a second quarter responsibility because the MTEC submissions take place after the end of the first quarter. So that process is in line and it feeds then into the MTEF processes that will get reported on in the second quarter process. In relation to the alignment of functions and structure, the focus for this quarter was to ensure aligned correctional structures. The focus in terms of the actual performance has been to ensure that the MATD, that's the remand detention structure, bearing in mind that we are establishing a remand detention branch, that the structures of that from centre level should be remand detention level, facility level upwards have been developed. In terms of percentage of person days lost due to leave, there's a consultation process around the establishment of the 4 pillars in relation to the managing of person days lost, and the policy was being processed for approval in the first quarter. The benchmarking with other public sector departments, little progress was made during that quarter. In terms of the work shift, the shift system, as indicated, we had hoped to develop different shift models in the averaging agreement. Negotiations were in process, and as indicated in the Commissioner's opening statement, that process still continues. Moving then to slide 6 on the suspensions. Here is a case in which we have not reported accurately against our first quarterly target. We'll ensure in the second quarter report that we report accurately against the target. In terms of the grievances, the target set for the first quarter was to continue with the training of the management of grievances from the previous year, and the 91 officials were trained from LMN. And my memory of it is that this was a process which we had initiated in the last annual report. In the annual report, we'd indicated the training of the remaining regions would take place. In terms of Functional Corrections Academy, our target for the first quarter was benchmarking with academies in the public sector, and indeed in that quarter, that benchmarking process had been initiated. On the skills training, our target for the first quarter was to develop the workplace skills plan. The WSP is the workplace skills plan. SASITA, the South African security SASITA, I don't have the full accurate name for it. But our challenge, our task there for the first quarter was to develop and approve and submit to SASITA the workplace skills plan. SASITA has introduced a new web-based workplace skills plan that needs to be submitted by the end of July, so it falls outside of that first quarter reporting process. But the tentative workplace skills plan was available by the end of the first quarter. The National Learning Committee was due to be meeting in July in order to finalise that prior to the submission of that to SASITA in July of that by the end of July. The Functional Professional Body for Corrections, the target was to ensure that we had a service provider to develop the business case, and by the first quarter, a submission had been done to obtain capacity for that through the Project Management Office. In terms of institutionalizing diversity management within the department, the target for the first quarter was to develop a diversity management framework. The cost implications of this were developed and a funding request submitted in that first quarter to be able to take that work forward. That's the corporate services indicators. Moving off that to the finance indicators, the first element is the percentage of allocated budget spent, and I think the Commission and the CFO had both spoken on this yesterday. Our under expenditure is at a level of 11% at the end of the first quarter. The monthly IYN submissions are in place. The monthly IYN support reports have been submitted. There is no unauthorized expenditure projected at the end of the first quarter. In terms of the value of contracts awarded to the HDI service providers, our first quarter target was to ensure that 80% of contracts awarded were to HDI service providers. We have, in fact, in actual performance, got 76.48, slightly under that process. Going forward through to the end of the year, the value of that those contracts will be factored into it, but we had set percentage targets for the various quarters. Historically disadvantaged individuals. Moving then to slide 9, on the audit qualifications, our first target was updated progress on the action plans from the Auditor General South Africa reports. Again, something that we spoke about yesterday. Sorry, I'm not sure what mine is. It should be properly off. Sorry, it was my phone that was not properly off. The updated implementation plans were submitted and are submitted on a monthly basis to Treasury, National Treasury NT, Internal Audit and the Audit Steering Committees, the ASC. In addition, monthly monitoring is performed by Internal Audit. Feedback is provided by Internal Audit to the Audit Committee and to the Audit Steering Committee. The Audit Steering Committee is a structure between the AG's office and the department. The Audit Committee is the audit oversight body. But in addition, just to pick up on one of the issues, Chairperson, that you raised in the beginning around a compliance unit, the Chief Directorate of Internal Control and Compliance has been established, and that unit is also responsible for monitoring of these action plans. So going forward, that team will be playing a critical role in relation to that process. In terms of the appropriate allocation of the budget on delivery of the white paper, our target was to draft a chart management of accounts. We had not completed that by the end of the first quarter. There's an interactive process to ensure that we can look at exactly how to do that and be able to go forward in a way that can assist both the department and yourselves as oversight body in relation to that responsibility. Turning then to the Central Services Budget Program, on the litigation, the actual performance was 80% in favor of DCS, 10 cases finalised, 8 of which were in favour of DCS and 2 against DCS. Important to note, 77 litigation processes pending as we go forward into the rest of the financial year. In relation to the percentage of officials charged with fraud, corruption, serious maladministration, we had set as a target a conviction rate of 84%. Our success rate was 96.5%. That involved 57 officials charged, 55 found guilty, 2 acquitted, 5 cases withdrawn, and the sanctions were written warnings, 1 final written warning, 43, suspension without salary, 5, and dismissal, 6. And I think important to recognise that within that category, you've got some cases that are serious and some cases that are less serious, which is why the sanctions are going to be varied in regard to that. On slide 11, the creation of a peering point to enable interoperability, and I'm hoping that the details of this will be left to the interaction with GITO next week. But the two elements of the target, the one is the integration audit. The draft integration audit strategy has been initiated. This is an important part of ensuring interoperability with the other criminal justice departments and the integrated justice system. The implementation of APIS, the automated personal identification system, which is one of the modules of what members of who've been on the portfolio committee for years would have known as inmate tracking. It's identification of the photograph and fingerprint processes. We are rolling that out during this financial year. We will ensure in the second quarterly report that you've got accurate information as to the extent of the rollout. So that is an aspect of that. In terms of the percentage of uptime of the ICT, the user requirement specifications, that's the URS, which includes a unified communications and telephone management system, is complete at the end of the first quarter and en route for approval. The paragraph below that, I would ask that we read that in combination with the first row of page 12, and I apologize that we put it into the wrong box. On slide 12, you will see that under actual performance of row 1 and row 2 is identical. The paragraph from slide 11 should be on the top row. So in relation to our new network and consolidated service and automated security policies, our target for the first quarter was planning and design, and the design for the new network, which includes a virtual private network, a VPN, functionality, meaning that we will have secured connectivity with high quality of service, is the actual performance against that planning and design target. Moving then off IT to the corrections process, we had set as an indicator measuring the percentage of people rating correctional services as performing well. We wanted to, in the first quarter, negotiate to buy into the GCIS, Government Communication Information Service-led survey of government performance, and the draft memorandum in relation to this had been developed and was being submitted at the end of the first quarter. It requires us to have an MOU with GCIS in this regard. The monitoring of favorable media coverage and tracking overall improvement in relation to this, our target for the first quarter was to have 10 good news stories that were published either in print or electronic media. We've reported here on one, but we do want to indicate that there were a number of others. There were opinion pieces crafted by the National Commissioner during that process. The DM had also done significant coverage in that process, and we will ensure going forward that we've got a better tracking mechanism, monitoring mechanism, for the coverage of good news stories in relation to the department. The integrated communication and marketing strategy. The target was to have that approved for communication strategy both to officials and offenders, and to kick off the implementation of it, given that the implementation is an ongoing and long-term basis, and to launch a staff newsletter and teleconference process. In the first quarter, the communication strategy had been drafted, but it needed to be amended to include a more beefed up internal communication strategy around the transformation agenda, so that we can ensure that the communication of the transformation of the department is effectively taken into our department, a very important process of ensuring that all officials are moving in the same direction. On the stakeholders process of ensuring that we had SLAs with partnership with stakeholders in relation to partners, our target for the first quarter was to ensure that there was a finalized stakeholder relations management strategic framework. We were not able to deliver on that due to resource constraints at that point. In relation to the regional, continental, and international partnerships, you'll see here that the actual performance does not report directly against the quarterly targets. It's an issue that will be amended going forward, but we do want to report, in addition to what you have here, that we have had engagement with Mozambique, Botswana, South Africa in relation to the Southern African Correction Steering Committee. Mozambique had volunteered to host the first first meeting of that. The UCSA Secretariat, the work has been done in relation to the structuring and capacity design of that. It's not, at this point, complete. We have interacted with the Commissioner of Lesotho to ensure that we can look at a way to unblock the process in relation to that and re-establish the interaction and the committee that does that work. In relation to our work with Zambia, we had also had an initial meeting with Commissioner Zambia to be able to look at the process going forward. Similarly, in terms of Mozambique, we have interacted to ensure that there's an establishment of the right task teams, names shared from both sides, to be able to move forward in relation to that. On the last one, there has been a process of engagement with New York in relation to that. It has not gone quite as fast as we had anticipated. And Chairperson, going forward, will ensure that that reporting against those targets is clearly defined. We move then to the security budget program. The assaults, I think enough said on assaults yesterday, but an indication already in the first quarter that our target has not been achieved. So it reinforces the direction given by the Portfolio Committee yesterday that we need to have a very clear strategic intervention to ensure that we address the issue of assaults. On the percentage of gang-related violent incidents, the target that we'd set ourselves was to do a regional evaluation report. We had not finalized those reports in that by the end of the first quarter. Work in progress, and it has been finalized during the second quarter, so we'll be able to give a better report on that in the second quarter report. On the establishment of the gang unit, the process has been an internal consultation process around the structure of the gang management unit, consultation with corporate services, consultation with the regions in terms of identifying exactly what is required in relation to that. On the unnatural deaths, we are under our target for that quarter. In relation to escapes, we are within our target. Our target for the first quarter was 15. We only had 8 escapes during that process. On the fully functional access control security turnstiles, we had wanted to ensure that we had 100% fully effective, fully functional. The target has not been achieved in relation to that. The integrated security technology strategy, what we need to flag here is that there is an interface between an integrated security technology and our ICT basic infrastructure. So our targets there will be cascaded out as we address the ICT basic infrastructure, because otherwise we run the risk of developing a security technology that won't speak to our basic infrastructure. So our targets have been postponed and stretched out in relation to that. Similarly, in terms of our inmate tracking system, this is not the electronic monitoring as in parolees and probationers. This is electronic monitoring internally. Again, it has a relationship with the ICT basic infrastructure, so the time frames are slightly longer. But it also speaks to the process of us rolling out the automated personal identification system, which is in the process at the moment. Moving on then to slide 17, the body scanning machine specifications, the development of specifications as well as the business case were in progress during that first quarter. The business case will be finalized in the second quarter. The partnership with Home Affairs, this relates to the automated fingerprint identification system that Home Affairs runs. The value for us of having an automated personal identification system in our department that has photographic and fingerprint recognition is of limited value if we are not able to then verify that the person who says that they are Jenny indeed, according to Home Affairs, isn't in fact Jenny. So this is an important element. The ACES process was not at the end of the first quarter at a stage which we would be able to move on that, but as the JITA will be able to indicate in the session next week, there has been progress in terms of that process, and he will be able to brief you on work, ongoing work in relation to that. In relation to the revised security policy procedures, let me explain the not applicable. The issue here is that, in fact, the security policy procedures had, in fact, been approved in the last quarter of last year. So the going forward into the second quarter, we will be reporting on how that implementation is in fact going forward. Moving off security to corrections, the issue of overcrowding, our target was to maintain the 36%, bearing in mind that that target was set against the APP. We in fact had a lower than 36% in the annual report, so our target would then obviously be to maintain at least that level. We are at the end of the first quarter at 34.7%. That, when we say that it is uncertified statistics, we need to indicate that we are using Excel reporting processes because of challenges at the moment in terms of our management information system that relate to our ICT basic infrastructure. So we are reporting against the MIS information, but we do have an Excel spreadsheet system that reports parallel to that into the National Overcrowding Task Team. In terms of the issue of sentence plans, if we were aiming to improve on the baseline, here again, our reporting does not speak directly to the level of improvement on that baseline. We'll ensure in the second quarter that we give you both the extent of the number of offenders with sentence plans and whether that is an improvement over the previous baseline. The percentage of newly admitted, our target was to ensure that 100%, we've not reached that. We've got a figure of 83.4% in relation to that. In relation to the percentage of corrections programs that are provided by external service providers, our target was the 73% of programs. Bearing in mind that that during this first quarter we had also recategorized our programs going forward, this will shift significantly, which is why we had reported there that we now have a database of all of the corrections programs. So we now have a single database of all corrections programs, all development programs, and all care programs, with all of the programs that we run very clearly and systematically categorized. And that's been an important development in terms of avoiding either inconsistent reporting in which a program is classified as a care program in one region, development program in another, and a corrections program in the other. So hopefully going forward that will improve our reporting. On the interstate transfers, we had said that we would need to develop a draft protocol. Indeed, in the first quarter, the development of that draft has been initiated. The development of dedicated short-term facilities, we wanted in the first quarter to identify those facilities. We had identified 10 correctional centres in the first quarter, and at the end of the first quarter, there were some regions that were still busy with identifying of the centres that they've got, which are the most appropriate for short-term offenders. The operationalizing of the remand detention white paper and the provisions of the correctional matters amendment, the target for the first quarter was to develop the remand detention white paper implementation framework. The draft regulations were developed and consulted within DCS and within the JCBS cluster departments, importantly because the responsibilities do not lie simply with our department, they also impact on other JCBS criminal justice departments. And those inputs are now with the legal and special ops component in relation to the actual drafting. In terms of the reduction of the average length of time to the remand detention system, our target was to reduce by 2.5 days. The challenge that we have here is that we are still in the process of developing the information system that will enable us to do that necessary gathering of information and the calculation of that reduction. So that was the status at the end of the first quarter. It is work in progress, and we will be able to move forward to report more accurately against the reduction of the length of duration. In terms of the percentage of offenders with approved parole dates who have completed pre-release centres, pre-release programs, we have significantly achieved above our actual performance in relation to that. The involvement of offenders in corrections programs, we had a target of 12,000 completing correctional programs, and our actual performance has been above that. But we do need to also indicate that given the categorization of programs in the first quarter, this statistic will also change going forward, and we will be able to be more accurate and consistent in terms of that reporting. The percentage of eligible offenders with work opportunities, we have achieved above our target in relation to that. In terms of bail, we have not achieved our target in relation to the issue of the bail protocol. The operational classification system for remand detention, the detainees, this is one of the elements that comes out of the white paper. The target for the first quarter was the development of a framework for that classification system. A draft discussion document has been developed in relation to that. And again, I think important to emphasize that that is, again, an issue that involves cluster involvement. The rationalizing of the correctional facilities, the draft concept document with recommendations was meant to be developed in the first one. It's not fully completed by the end of the first quarter, but the literature study and the concept document had been initiated and partially drafted during that process. The next indicator was in relation to maximizing the utilization of land that is allocated to DCS. The first quarter target was to get a register of land from public works that had been allocated, and we have indeed in the first quarter received that information. The challenge going forward then is to look at how we are utilizing it and how we should be utilizing it. The percentage of inmates tested for HIV, our target was 7,000. We have exceeded this very significantly in the first quarter. The percentage of HIV positive inmates eligible to be placed on ARVs, our target was 4,200. We've exceeded this with 4,500. Bearing in mind that it's very difficult to project those targets because it's actually it's a health determined. We may well not land up with that number of people who deal with it, but in fact the figures are 4,500. The percentage of inmates with a CD4 count below 350 who are on ARV treatment, we have 882 out of 1,431 in relation to that. The percentage of inmates diagnosed with mental illness and placed under treatment, our actual performance is higher than our target. We had 98% in relation to that. Moving then to the issue of the treatment of inmates for communicable diseases, hypertension and diabetes. The actual performance was 8,133, 4.85% of the population in medical treatment in relation to that. The percentage of offenders who participated in care programs, and bearing in mind yesterday the correction that we made in relation to this, that should in fact be the percentage of inmates who participate in care programs because a remand detainee is eligible for care programs in the same way that a sentenced offender is, which is why our denominator is 167,000 rather than the offender total. Slightly under the percentage that we had aimed to have involved in care programs in the first target. And bearing in mind that that will also, with the rationalization of, or the categorization of programs, will also significantly shift as we go through the rest of the year. The percentage of care programs provided by external service providers, 173 programs provided in relation to that, but bearing in mind that that is going to fundamentally change on the basis of the categorization of the program. The next indicator deals with the number of food service units that with the required resources for the provision of food services. We wanted to have an assessment tool to monitor the food services readiness in the first quarter. The drafted food assessment tool was developed in line with Regulation 918 at that point. Moving off care then to the development indicators. In relation to literacy, we had set a target of 64.7. We are slightly above that at 70%. The percentage of eligible offenders involved in AVID, we are again above our target for the first quarter. In terms of participating in EVT mainstream education programs, we are slightly under what we had hoped to achieve in relation to that aspect. Moving to slide 25, the percentage of eligible offenders who participate in FET college programs, we are above our target, quarterly target in relation to that. implemented reviews involved informal schooling. We had two elements here. One was to include a target for youth in formal education. Our actual performance there is that we have 17% of the youth involved in formal education, and our target then was to ensure that 6 centres were registered as full-time schools, a target that has been achieved for this financial year. And obviously that's a target that won't change from quarter to quarter. The percentage of eligible offenders who participate in skills development programs, we are under the target that we had wanted to achieve for the first quarter, as opposed to 18.9, we're at 12% in relation to that. The participation in production workshop and agriculture, the 2.4% target relates to production, the 4.4% relates to agriculture. We are delivering in relation to that, not quite at the level of what we are wanting to be able to deal with, but again, it's an issue in which the indicator, the target, and the way in which we report it is not consistent and doesn't give us a real sense of the delivery. 2.6, I think again yesterday we spoke about the trading entity being established. Our target for the first quarter was benchmarking. I think the Commissioner already indicated yesterday that the interaction with departments has started, and you can see from that that process has been embarked on. Moving then to the attainment of our agricultural targets, the targets that we'd set in the APP were national targets. Our actual performance for the quarter was given per region, and we had not aggregated that to give you the national targets. We will ensure going forward that we give you those aggregated as well so that they are directly comparable with the national targets going forward. I'm not going to read through chapters in each one of those lines. I'm sure that members can deal with it themselves. In relation to sports, we've given you the targets against each of them, and we've broken it down. The targets were fact set per region, and we have reported appropriately per region, indicating both the absolute number and the percentages. I'm moving then to listen to the social reintegration budget program, slide 29. The percentage of parolees without parole violations for the year is our performance indicator overall. We set targets to ensure that there is a percentage increase per quarter of the number of parolees without violations. Our reporting of the actual performance is not directly in the same format as the quarterly target. We'll address that going forward. But we have got a 68.7 percentage of parolees at the end of the first quarter without parole violations. I think it's important to just remind us that historically we had reported that the other way around. We'd reported on parolees with violations. We felt it was more important for us to start reporting positively on those parolees who managed to get through parole without violation. The victim involvement in parole cases, our target was 2.2%. We've not made that. We've got 1.3%. The percentage of eligible cases considered by our parole boards, we are slightly under that process. We had targeted 90% of the cases should have been considered. 77.3% has been considered in that first quarter. On slide 30, the review of the referral of cases to the parole review board. We had less cases referred to the parole review board than we had projected as a target. Obviously, it's an odd target because in one sense, if there are anomalies in parole board decisions, we want the cases reviewed, but at the same time, we want our parole boards to be functioning well enough for issues not to need to be sent to the parole boards. And that's why we had also had as our target for that process the training of the parole boards. We had not included the report on the training of the parole boards, but the parole boards have been appointed. Training has been taking place through into the second quarter. The ratio of incarcerated offenders with sentences of less than 24 months versus probationers, we have reported here on the basis of the ratio. We've not reported in the first quarter on the percentage increase, and we will ensure going forward that we do both, because the overall for the whole year is to report on that ratio, but on a quarterly basis we are wanting to track the percentage of increase in probationers under community corrections. On the functional electronic monitoring system, I think the Commissioner had spoken yesterday on the situation going beyond what we had here, but this is the report as it was at the end of the first quarter. The issue of medical parole, our target was to ensure that we had the parole board's healthcare managers, unit managers, trained on the medical parole policy and procedures. We have indicated in our actual performance that the appointment of the medical parole advisory boards is yet to take place. That is a second quarter process. But I think what we need to flag here is that the training has been postponed because the finalization of the actual policy approval had not taken place in the first quarter, so you can't train people on something that had not, the policy had not been, policies and procedures had not been finally approved. The consideration of all offenders sentenced, this is the Van Vuren case, significant progress in relation to that. We wanted 50% of those to have been considered by the end of the first quarter. In fact, the Minister had considered considerably more than 50%. And that it was expected that we would be finalising that in the second quarter. The framework for the halfway houses and piloting of halfway house processes, what our target was to have a feasibility study conducted. We have had a roundtable discussion. On the basis of that, we have developed a business case. The feasibility study will flow out of the finalisation of the project charter and the business case. But in addition, we have already started with the process of looking at the existing halfway houses and being able to learn from practice in relation to existing halfway houses in other institutions and our own historical experiences in the department. Moving then to the last budget program facilities, the number of new bed spaces created, this is in relation to the PPP project, the evaluation process. The evaluation committee had not been established in relation to that. The upgrading of existing facilities, the progress is reported on each of those existing facilities. In terms of the new head office space and the head office space and then LMN and KZN, the business case around the regional offices, the business case development processes were in place during the first quarter. The slide 33. The construction of nodes for IT service, again, the business case development is in progress during the first quarter, and I'm sure that Jito will be able to elaborate on that in your interaction with him next week. The Bronfley maximum renovation, the development of a business case was in progress during the first quarter. The Harting, that third row relates to the Leeuwkop juvenile. A business case was submitted for approval in the first quarter. The next row, and I do apologize, in the targets don't necessarily express themselves clearly about what the target is, and we will ensure going forward that our targets remind you of what it is. The fourth row there relates to the audit of compliance with infrastructure requirements. So the approval of the service provider in relation to the conduct of the auditions assessment, there wasn't progress in relation to that by the end of the first quarter. There will be progress that we will be reporting on in the second quarter. The next row relates to the building of schools, the identification of needs in relation to our targets in relation to formal schooling. The business case is in progress in the first quarter on that. The business case around the women's centre in Gauteng is the second to last row of this page. The business case and the proposals around how we manage women inmates within Gauteng has been initiated, and the proposal in relation to that is currently in progress. So we had not finalised that in the first quarter, but there is significant progress on that. The last row of that slide relates to the identification of workshop capacity needs, and that the business case of that was in progress in the first quarter. Moving to the conclusion then, to just reflect back on what we had said yesterday, that the process of quarterly reporting, which is supported by our system of monthly reporting, is aiming to ensure that as we go through each of the months and through the quarters, we're able to show not only improved delivery, but improved quality of our reporting. As we've indicated, there are still some areas of concern, inconsistency in reporting. The format of actual performance differs from the target. Reported information not being reliable, incomplete and late submissions. All of these are issues that we addressed in our quarterly performance review meeting, and we've undertaken to address them going forward in the second quarter report. The adherence to the reporting requirements and the due date, and the identification of red flags and timely intervention to address underperformance is what we hope to be able to increasingly focus on. Our process of developing an APP data capturing tool, which will hopefully be implemented by the end of December, will enable us to be putting less emphasis on the data itself and more on the analysis of the target and actual performance and therefore on the interventions going forward. I think we've already spoken yesterday to the processes of the action plan, and we will make sure that we provide you with a copy of that and report on it as we go forward. The approach that we've adopted in preparing this quarterly report, in which we would want to continue going forward, is that we report on the performance, but we also reflect on the delivery on the action plan or the implementation of the action plan, so that we have a sense as we go forward on our improvements going forward. I can now hand over to Ms. Mabeka to do the finance section.
Can we just have a change of plan instead of doing that one, because there was so much information? I think let us rather interrogate this, and then we'll do the same with the finance. It is 11 o'clock. Can we interrogate it at least initially until about 11:30, 11:45, and if we need to, we'll come back to it later on, just so that we don't lose some of the information that we received now. So we will proceed with the finances at about 11:45, ma'am. Okay. Mr. Self, and then Advocate Max.
Thank you very much, Chair, and thank you for the report. Can I, if you like, start at the back and work forward? The first concerns the building program. And the top of the of slide 32, you talk about the establishment of the Interdepartmental Evaluation Committee, and Jenny then sort of said, oops, that deals with the PPPs. And there's 0% actual progress. I actually want to know what's going on, because you know these bids expire at the end of this month. And if there is a decision to discontinue the bids, it's going to have very serious consequences for the credibility of this department and of the state in general. But what's worse than taking a decision of that nature is being silent about what decisions you've taken anyway. And, you know, whatever one says about the PPPs, they at least get built on time. Now, if you look at Van Rynsdorp, for example, which is now 73% complete, according to this, to my knowledge, that project started in 2008. In other words, it's been 4 years in the progress, really. And every time I drive past there, it's still being built. And my information is that the plans keep getting changed, the specifications keep getting changed, and really these departmental projects actually have taken years and years and years to finish. And I'm not sure, you know, I know everybody else's views about the PPPs and how much they cost. You know, I mean, there's some opportunity costs here as well, which I think we need to drill down and look at. Then if I can talk about, on slide 29, the percentage of eligible cases considered by the parole board, which stands, well, the target stands at 90 and the actual stands at 77.3. There are obvious implications for overcrowding there. You know, when we considered overcrowding as a committee, I don't think we really dealt with this particular aspect of delays of the parole boards. But
I'd be very interested to know what action plans are in place to address, to make the 77.3 up to 100%, or to 90% rather. Then, if I can just move to slide 20, which deals with the participation of offenders in various programs. Firstly, I would like some clarity about pre-release programs, because as I understand it, pre-release programs are, in any event, only offered to people with sentences over 24 months. And if I read this correctly, the targets themselves are very low, and the implication of not either reaching or not reaching those targets is that substantial numbers of offenders go off into the streets without having any pre-release programs offered to them, and that has obvious implications for reoffending. I'm not saying that if somebody's done a pre-release program, they'll not reoffend, but what I am saying is that statistically, your chances of not reoffending must be better if you've done some sort of pre-release training course. I would just respectfully suggest that the figures, the targets, which, as you, Chair, said, yes, they tend to be based on last year's targets, are actually very low when you're looking at both involvement in corrections programs and involvement with work opportunities. And again, I understand work opportunities doesn't mean necessarily that an offender works for 8 hours every day. It means that you might work once a week or twice a week or whenever there's a work opportunity for you. So I'd like a little bit of clarity on what work opportunities actually means. Does it mean that there are 39,201 offenders who work for 8 hours, 5 days a week? Or does it mean something else? And then, just on this round, finally, one of the ways that we can manage overcrowding down is by having a prisoner transfer, interstate transfer of offenders. And I'm very pleased the department's now created a structure that deals with this very directly and individually. But I would like to know where we are on the protocol on interstate transfers. We see it's been developed. Well, that's good, but where to from here? What's the next step, and when can we expect to have such a protocol in place? And if the problem doesn't lie with the department, where does the problem lie so that we can address that too? Thank you, Chair.
Thanks, Chair. I would also respond from the last question in the same manner. On the interstate transfer of inmates, that has been a big concern for a number of years, but we have felt that it's part of the safety valve in releasing some of the people who might not have committed serious crimes who are sitting in our facilities. The protocols have been written. Department of International Relations and Cooperation is part of this because it has to do with policy and as well as the constitution of the country's consent. The cluster, JCP cluster, have also participated in the process. Now the process is in terms of negotiating with the country's consent as to whether the types and crimes and the categories of criminals or inmates who are affected will be implemented. It's a very thorny issue, because some constitutions where inmates with certain types of categories of crime in their home countries may qualify for a different type of sentence. We can assure you here that the first phase has been completed, and therefore, because this is a matter that deals with interstate, it will be dependent in terms of what you call the bilateral discussions that will take place in the JCPDS discussions. As per country, I know we'll be having a meeting with Botswana next week, and therefore it will be taken on state by state. It will not be a blanket decision, because there might be countries where we may not be in a position to transfer some of the inmates. chairperson and the portfolio committee members, this is a matter that will be dealt with so that the terms and conditions and agreements are reached appropriately, because it involves a number of issues as to whether we will be releasing a certain category of crime. Some countries might say we want all our inmates here, and therefore we need to be very careful as to which ones qualify. As a department, we'll be able to be guided from a political perspective by the leadership of this country as to which ones we think we may. A case in point is Mate. He's a high criminal, very sensitive, and then we may want to ask ourselves, are there conditions for Mate to be incarcerated in his home country to avoid a position where he may come back and cause more harm? So it's a very delicate balance that needs to be looked into, but certainly it's a matter that we really appreciated that finally all stakeholders, especially in the JCPS cluster, welcome. There was a lot of reticence from the police because they say we arrest these people, and here you are, you want to take these people back to their country, and what if? And indeed, we need to address some of the concerns. The same applied to justice. We've sentenced them for 30 years, and this is what. So we need to be very careful, and these are the issues that we've taken on board. With respect to the other questions, the first one, slide 32 on the PPP, we have taken note of the concern, but I should think it is important, Chairperson and members of the Portfolio Committee, the matter of the PPP has been discussed in a joint session with the Portfolio Committee as well as SCOPA. We are aware of the financial implications, and why we are reporting that nothing has happened yet is precisely because there is a delicate balance in terms of not reporting the matter in the manner in which we want to say whether we are going on and what we are discontinuing. It's a matter that needs to be taken further by that department together with the policy directives that have come from the ministry. But certainly there are pros and cons in any projects, and we've taken note of the Honourable Member of the Portfolio Committee has indicated that some of the departmental projects are taking too long to complete. And that itself, it juxtaposes whether we go on our own or we take the PPP process. The same can be said with respect to the Kimberley, the cost implications, the analysis, and of course, you're right, Rich, correct when you said the opportunity costs. And I should think it's about time that management is conscious of the fact that a little bit of economic analysis is given, so that whenever we embark on any project whatsoever, that state money is not lost for the sake of expediency. And all I could say is that this matter indeed, because the time lag is that at the end of this month, the agreements will be coming to an end, and therefore the department will pronounce its position. I'll allow my colleagues to respond on the CSPBs, pre-release, work opportunities, and other related questions that were raised by the members of the Portfolio Committee. Thanks, Chair.
Thanks very much, Chairperson. Let me just give an explanation on why we are not performing with regards to the performance of our parole boards with regards to the target that we have set. The problem that we are experiencing currently with the parole boards is that we know for a fact that the parole boards are entirely dependent on case management committees. The case management committees, which are really preparing the profiles for the parole boards so that the parole boards can be able to take a decision. Now, we have structural issues at CMCs. We do not have permanent structures, but all the same, we have tried as a department to try to have or establish interim structures that will assist. And the other problem that we are having, besides the fact that we have interim structures on CMCs, is the fact that while the parole boards are also, you know, trying to consider the decisions to release, to place the offenders on parole or not, we also have problem of support systems. That is our major problem. And as a department, we are trying, you know, to involve the families to accept, you know, the you know the arrestees or offenders. But we know very well that, you know, that is a very, very problematic area as a department. You know, society at the current moment cannot accept, you know, offenders. And this is where we are, but we are trying as a department that, you know, if we can actually, you know, have families, you know, accepting their families, you know, in the long term. I know that we've been talking about that, you know, for years. But I think the drive that the department is having, particularly by our minister, in terms of the, you know, community mobilization, the imbizo, will certainly assist us, you know, at the end. And I'm not quite sure, you know, Chairperson, if I'm preempting this, but I have the, we, it's our opinion as the department that once maybe we have the, you know, halfway house established, I think that will actually assist us in trying to, you know, talk with the families first, you know, or remedy, you know, the family relationships that the offenders are having before we really place them out, because we have really seen that with our juveniles, that we have them in our facilities and they do have the approved parole dates. But the fact that they don't want it by their families is actually, you know, is a cause for concern for the department. So we really think that, you know, once we have those structural issues addressed, the CMCs, and to also address the support systems, and also the consistent decision making by the parole boards. That is the problem that we have. And we know that we have new parole boards that have been appointed and we have trained them. And we really think that by going forward, maybe sometimes next year we'll be able to see that, you know, they are really taking a consistent decision.
Let us just put you on the spot a little bit longer, ma'am. You know, for some reason, LeoCorp, I agree that your CMC structures are one of your weaknesses. Now, we went to LeoCorp last year, or beginning of this year, and we raised it directly with the department, the structure of the CMCs, in LeoCorp specifically, because that's where we picked up the problem. A year later, we think that you must come back to us and tell us what it is that you are doing. We've said to stakeholders, don't diagnose the problem for us. Tell us what the department should be doing to fix it up. So we'd like you to come back and tell us what it is that you are doing. To say the CMCs are not functional, we know that a year ago already, but it will help us if you came and you said these are the steps that we are taking or these are the challenges. And I'm using LeoCorp as an example because we were there. And I'd want you to use that as a case study, ma'am. There's a guy called Sianda Mapasa in LeoCorp. You know, this guy phones every day. CMC refused to recommend parole because he had not spoken to the victims. He took it upon himself to go and talk to the victims. Or not to talk to victims, to identify the victims. He identified the victims. He's ready to go and talk to the victims. Still nothing is done. Last week he sent us a long letter, and you'll probably get it because I know he sent one asking Cindy if she's received it, a courier type of thing, saying, I've done everything. It is you guys that are not doing anything. I took it upon myself as the inmate to do it because you guys are not doing anything. And I think it's what you're saying. So our appeal is that you don't go or you don't come back and tell us that it's a CMC problem. Come and tell us what it is that you're doing. Across the board, we're using LeoCorp as an example because it seems to be very ripe at LeoCorp, although there are others. But either the guys at LeoCorp are much cleverer or your board needs serious work at LeoCorp. The second part around this one that officials, our stakeholders brought to us, and maybe you need to look at, is sometimes there's a sense that the department unnecessarily brings people back for parole violations. Unnecessarily does so. So Mr. Self is saying, please jack up the parole system so that we have a release of pressure of overcrowding, and yet we get a report that the department, somebody goes and looks for a job. I know of a guy that phoned me and said to me, I spoke to my parole board officer, I went to Alberton for a job, these guys came here, They didn't find me here. And now they're on their way taking me back as I speak. No, they've said to me I must come and report. And I've said to him, well, phone those guys and tell them to phone me if you've got a problem. So I think you guys also need to educate these guys around being vindictive sometimes. Really, we should be flexible. If somebody's gone to look for a job, he phoned, he said he's not going to be at his place, your guys come there and then want him arrested, it creates all sorts of problems and it contradicts what Mr. Shelf is saying. So around parole, we didn't want to get involved in it yesterday because we've beaten this animal to death as a portfolio committee. But we'd just like you to look at those things. Certainly the violations. Jenny, we're glad you are saying you're now reporting on those that have not violated as opposed to those that have violated. But we are just saying to you, improve that a little bit more by teaching your parole or whatever they are that, look, guys, let's be flexible, especially if somebody's gone to look for a job or something like that. It's not in anybody's interest to take him back to prison. Not in yours from a pressure of management, not the state from a pressure of cost, not in the inmates' one. So if you deal with the CMCs and you deal with how you're managing the supervision in the second quarter, it'll help us so that we then can debate whether you're doing the right thing or wrong thing around parole. We don't want to beat it to death, certainly not in this hearing. We then had the offender participation, if somebody wants to talk to that one. Mr. Self was talking especially pre-release and what is exactly his work opportunities. I don't know, Commissioner, if you wanted to talk to this one before we went there.
Chair, we would like to appreciate the comment on the weaknesses that you have identified within the CMCs and the need for us to take cognizance of the fact that we should not be taking vindictive positions. What needs to be done within the department as a measure, as a matter of urgency, is the training and also to have what you call a roadmap that is able to give a standardization of understanding what are the needs of these parolees and probationers. Because it is very easy for us to take a book and say, you have failed to do this, but also fail to take cognizance of the fact that there might be mitigating reasons for some of the people not being at where they're supposed to be. So what you might call a generalized approach is something that we need to be dealing with. We need to be doing, on our side, a lot of training for people who are dealing with offenders. Because in most cases, rightly said, in the case where you have interacted with me with LOCOP, which is a case in point, there is a lack of understanding at times on our side as to some of the cases that are before us. And the earlier and easier that we deal with this, it gives space for us also to go through the process of learning. And I should think we should take this criticism with the positive that it has in terms of creating an ambience within the organization. If our community corrections is not stepped up and being able to understand some of the nuances, honestly, we'll be taking a Gestapo approach to things. And we need to be very mindful as to the fact that we don't want them to re-offend. But there must be measures that are put in place for them to understand. The other issue I should think which we need to report is that we've started to produce pamphlets which will be distributed across the whole country for all inmates to know their rights and responsibilities, especially on to when is parole, when you're eligible for parole, and also that should be cascaded to the community. Because it is easy for us to say they understand, but at the same time, we as officers don't understand the issues of parole and how you qualify for it. So it is an educational process on both sides of the offender and officials in the department. So we have started on that so that we can translate the pamphlet that deals with parole in the different languages. So that people, those who are illiterate, they should be told as to what are the consequences of or the processes thereof. Colleagues will respond on the work opportunities and pre-release. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you, Chairperson. If I understood the question of pre-release well, the Honourable Member was asking to which offenders is it being offered. The pre-release program is offered to those offenders that we are preparing for release. It may be those that are sentenced 24 months or less. It may also be those that have been given their dates for parole and are preparing to go out.
And part of it would also include giving people a day parole just to see how they adjust, but it focuses mainly on trying to teach them about reintegrating back into society.
Thank you for that response. Actually, it was a slightly different question that I was asking. I was concerned about the number of people who didn't get any pre-release training before they were released and the implications that that might have for reoffending. Plus, I was also concerned that what was actually meant by a work opportunity, because I was concerned that, you know, the Portfolio Committee itself is very keen that all offenders work all the time. So I wanted to know exactly what it meant when that, what was meant by that performance indicator. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson and the members of the committee. Basically, I'm going to respond on the work opportunities as it has already been asked by the honourable member. Work opportunities, as it is indicated here, it talks about the jobs or work that is being done by the offenders, basically to avoid, amongst others, idleness within the correctional centres, to prepare them for the life out there so that they are able to sustain themselves and be able to feed their families. So here I'm talking, amongst others, be able to cook, as we do have cookers in some other centres. Those that are cleaning the yards, I'm talking about landscaping, I'm talking about a number of real activities that are taking place within the correctional systems. Now, when we say 41%, which is represented by 37,379, that was our target that we have set for ourselves, based on the baselines or the previous performance. And it has already been alluded to, Chairperson, earlier on, even yesterday, that we had really a shift pattern of system problems that is being addressed by the department, with an understanding that by next week, progress will definitely be reported in terms of this matter. So it does have really a negative impact. I'm talking about the shift system, because the moment you do not have more members to take these offenders out, obviously you would not have the number that you suggest to have. But I should indicate here, Chairperson and members of the committee, that during our first quarter there was an improvement. That is for that reason there was a question asked to say, what does this 39,201 mean? It means that was the actual number of offenders that were participating in work opportunities that I've just mentioned. Vis-a-vis the workforce that is available of about 66,571. But I should promise here, moving forward, that has already been reported yesterday and today, that we are definitely improving on this, with an understanding that the shift patterns as well will also up the performance in terms of this area. Chairperson, moving on to the CMCs, just to add what has already been tabled here, I should indicate that while we are again talking about the shortage of staff, which was alluded to yesterday, and the shift patterns, it really had sort of a negative impact. And we are saying here, what has been done in terms of the CMC, let alone the structure that has not been approved, but a lot has been done. We have already indicated, I think on the 12th, when we met the portfolio committee in her office, that the investigation, work study investigation on CMC, has already been approved by the commissioner. Right now, we are in a process of finalizing that work study. You will understand, Chairperson, that in terms of the unit management concept that is implemented within the department, it suggests that the ratio of the CMC should be 1:720. So because of the complexity of our system that we have, because a unit management concept is a, I would say, is an international kind of a norm that is being implemented there. We realize that in South Africa, we will need a little bit lesser ratio than what the norm is. Therefore, we came up with a norm which says, or a ratio that says, one should be 480. So that is that work study document that has already been approved, and now we're in a process of finalizing the rightful ratio for the CMC moving forward. And I don't have any doubt in my mind that is receiving urgent attention, and we've already started. While we are waiting for the approval of the structure, we started training the CMC staff, which it has already been finalized, I think, 2 weeks ago, and it was reported during our last meeting in head office. Thanks, Chair.
Let us just on this thing of the work opportunities. I think we need to discuss it a bit more, not necessarily now. My own view, and I'll give you my view, and I think that the committee will come with recommendations later on. You know, the layman's or our layman's understanding of this thing is that people must work. Now, we understand that there are limitations. What I think we need to discuss as a committee and maybe debate is, when does the department regard it as a work opportunity? In other words, we should be saying, you must work a minimum of 40 weeks a month, for instance, before you regard that as one work opportunity. Because somebody working for 2 hours a day and you make it a work opportunity is not enough. We'll debate what we think the minimum hours are. We know that he's not going to work 8 hours a day every day because of the shifts and those type of things. But I think we're going to discuss and say, for you to measure it as one work opportunity, you must come and say that this guy has worked so many hours. Whether it's 10 hours in the field, 10 hours painting, whatever it is, but he must have sweated for so many hours per month, because I think that target as we have it there is totally meaningless. It's not helping anybody. So I think you guys must go and decide on your own what you think the minimum unit should be per person before we say that there's an opportunity. We will discuss it ourselves, and at some point we'll agree on a figure. I think, Mr. Self, that's going to help us, because we've been talking about this thing for a long time. Well, you guys will know better than us, but we will also come at something that says, look, anybody that has worked less than so many hours per month, don't even put it there as an achievement, and we'll take it from there. I hope that then kills the work opportunity. So, Jen, if you could put a question mark, let us agree it as a collective, what we regard as a work opportunity, and you might have to change your targets on the basis of our agreement. Okay. Is there any other follow-up, Mr. Self? You're calling up on this one before you go. Yes, Ms.
Yes, sir, thank you. Sorry. Okay.
No, I don't have questions, in fact. I think all is going to be follow-ups, because even the first one of facilities that Mr. Salvez said, on my follow-up on that one, on facilities, is that the report is indicating that Framplay was 98%, then completed, and now in this report is 98% again. Then it shows that there's no progress. So I wanted clarity in terms of that, because now it's going to be same situation in Kimberley, whereby the report is visible with regard to care. There is no progress in terms of percentages also. So I wanted clarity on that one, Chair. Then again, Chair, on the parole board, is all I was trying to run away from this. But today, I'll comment, Chair. I don't think it maybe is a question. But the question that I have is that the department has been completed to build all the parole spots, because in the report it is not clear about the complication or complete all the parole spots. I don't get it on the report here because it's not reported. So, Chair, in terms of the pamphlet that a commissioner was talking about, or it's a booklet, my comment, Chair, is that those pamphlets also need to go to the PCOs, because that parliamentary office, we're working with community. Because I've observed that many communities, they're not aware of parole. In my constituency, the parole people that they come and see Bandula, they used to come on Mondays. And what I observe now, they come with photo of that person, because they were struggling to get them. When they come and said, we are coming to look for Winnie, and Winnie will say, Winnie Gako. Or the person who's not Winnie said, I'm Winnie. Now, when they come to check that parole person, they come with the photo of that person to see that is it that person really. The challenge here, Chair, is the community. And us as politicians, we need to make sure that we implement this community correctional forum, because most of people, they don't understand about it. And I used to ask a commissioner, the department, that the other thing that can assist Imbizo, when you call Imbizo la uma constituency 8, people, they come, and we need to talk about this until people understand it. Because there's no use for us, Chair, to come always here and say other families, they don't want to accept these people. But if we continue to talk to them and train them, they're going to understand. Like the one that we have made on the 8th of August. We call all the women to say, "Now, you don't want to come to see them, and it's your responsibility. Some of you don't want even to accept them, even if they're out with parole. Therefore, now these are your children." Some people, they were crying there. They said, "We didn't know. We've got so big responsible like this." On the 8th of August, Chair, we're calling that, the department was calling that Imbizo for women to talk to the inmate inside in the center. So I would like those pamphlets also to be visible to the PCO, asking to the commissioner. In terms of the transfer, Chair, it's a challenge, or it's an implementation, I don't know how to call it. I've got a letter, maybe I'll bring it next week when I come, I'll come with those letters of people that they are crying for transfer. I'm not talking about people that are coming from other countries, inside in our country. They've got a problem of their children that are sentenced far from their home, and they've been applied and applied, but they don't get a response. Then I said to them, I cannot take it without any letter that shows me that you have applied and applied. So I want to make sure that you have done that. Then before I said you didn't get an answer. So I think that one also, we need to be implemented, that a transfer needs to be done, because some of them, they're old, they can't go and see their children where they are. And Chairperson, again, in terms of a working opportunity, I understand that the department is talking more about inmates that are inside in our center. But when we go to oversight, the challenge that we face is that is the one that Chairperson was talking about, that maybe we need to get a clarity that a person is getting that stipends or whatever after he have working so long or how long, because we got that they are crying that they didn't get their salary. They call it salary themselves. They are saying their salary. They buy soap, they buy roll on with it, and if they didn't get it, then they can't get those roll on and soap. Then they were saying they are not getting it enough. Sometimes it's 30 rand a month, sometimes they don't get it at all. So it was not clear from us that by Tola Magwenzinjan and by Tola Magwenzaranjan, then we started to decide to ourselves that maybe now we are over, you are sleeping in the cell, you are not coming, maybe that's why you are not getting your money. I think also that one needs to be clarified. Again, on working opportunity, Chairperson, we still got that stigma that is staying in the system for the inmate when it is out. Maybe that one also needs a debate check, because that stigma is the main problem. On the debate that the commissioner was making on TV, there were people that were asking that question, commissioner. Unfortunately, I had to leave, then I didn't hear what you answer them in terms of that. To say, I was an inmate, but now I'm out and I'm finished my parole, and I was doing carpentry inside the center, but now I'm out, I can't get job because of the stigma that I have, that I've got a record of being in prison. So I didn't hear what you asked, what is the question that the reply. I didn't hear because even myself, I do have people that are crying about that stigma of staying long on the system. So ukubafundisa kwethu umsebenzi, I don't think ukuthi kusiza kakhulu if ever we are going to rehabilitate them and give them skills, and after they are out, that skills they can't use it because of the stigma. Maybe, Chair, we need to debate thoroughly how long must a person be a criminal record. Maybe we need to change that. If there's a review that we need to do in terms of our act, the legislature, maybe we need to do that, because really it's a challenge for us to rehabilitate people and give them skills, but when they're outside, they can't use that skill. Thank you, Chairperson.
Department respond to all those things very briefly, otherwise time is going to catch us up. Let's remind you again, it's what's the problem with the Brandfle issue? Why is it standing still? Again, we are saying, please don't give us the problem. We know the problem. Give us what you're doing about solving it. So it's the Brandfle one. It's about parole board officers in terms of percentage completion, policy and or implementation of transfers, gratuity policy, and the stigmatization of ex-offenders. I know that we've been discussing that. I mean, I have the answer, but we'll afford you an opportunity to raise those things. If anybody could, and whatever else you wanted to answer, ma'am, previously. But very briefly, so that we can move on to Advocate Max and then move on to the finances.
Chairperson, quickly, on the gratuity, the department is looking in terms of increasing the gratuity of inmates when they do offender labor. That is a process that needs to also be approved by the National Treasurer. That's one. We are aware that it's fairly minimal. It doesn't afford them to be able to buy some of the things that they want to do. On the question of the stigma that Ma'am Gwenya is talking about, I should think it's a much bigger issue. It means that for the state must expand some of the criminal records that have taken place. But I should think your question is double-edged in the sense that much as they leave, what is it that we as a department create for them to be able to link up with certain organizations outside there? I should think it's something that we need to start looking at so that they can quickly become part and parcel of the community, because we say they need to be reintegrated into the society. There must be something tangible in that respect. With respect to the facilities indicated here, Chairperson, I should think we need to come back ourselves and interrogate and find out from the regional commissioners the reasons of the delays. Because I don't want to second guess, and because this report, it's in black and white, and we need to get in writing as to what are the actual causes of the delays thus far. If it's 98%, is it 2% snagging? Is it the question of finding out whether we are about to open? You know, that's some of the things that we need to look into. With respect to the imbizos that MAM has indicated, I should think yes, they form a platform upon which the process of communicating the role and the responsibilities and how the parole system works, that I should think must be done. But international best practice that we have seen is that in most centers and prisons, inmates as they walk in, they have a booklet and that indicates as to their role, responsibilities, and how they should behave. The same should apply for them to be able to have in their own languages, where possible, what is parole? How do you qualify? What measures? Because it puts them in tow and in line. Their behavior, their attitude, it contributes not only the attendance of programs. Because if we leave that in terms of standard procedures, it doesn't help them. It's their behavior and attitude. You can go all these programs, but if your attitude is negative, you'll still come back. And you might not even qualify. But I would like to give the other colleagues an opportunity to respond to other things in this respect. Thanks, Chair.
Thanks, Chair. I wanted to get back to the issue of the pre-release programs and say to honorable members, we don't have the figure at hand of how many offenders were not exposed, but we will try and provide that figure in writing. It is our policy that all offenders must be exposed to pre-release programs, but we also acknowledge the fact that we have challenges in some of the centers because most of these programs are presented by non-governmental organizations. So in an area where you don't have a non-governmental organization functioning, people might not. But what we normally encourage is that if that is the case, people must be transferred to a center where there are programs. So we would have to go back and get the figures if there are any that have been released without that exposure. Thank you, Chairperson.
Yes, quickly on the transfers. I should think the issue of transfers is the biggest headache and it affects a number of people. Now, I should think a quick response to this is that it's a matter that the department is looking at very, very seriously. There's a case in point, people who are from the Western Cape who are sitting in Kimberley, for example. We need to be very careful that we don't transfer people for the sake of transferring them. There is a reason, because if we bring them to the Western Cape, the levels of overcrowding will go up and recidivism, all these things. I have also personally received calls from mothers and parents about their children who are in Barberton, they are in Klerksdorp. But I should think, Chairperson, we need to be very sensitive about this. I remember the Honorable Minister, Mapisa Ngakula, saying that we need to take a position at one point or the other as a collective, as a department, wherein we may have what you call a visitation day, wherein we may consult our stakeholders in Transnet or PRASA to say, can the parents of these offenders have what you call subsidized tickets to one particular area to the other so they can be able once in a year to come and visit their loved ones because they form part of the process of rehabilitation and reintegration. So we treat this matter with the delicate that it deserves, but it's not going to be every time we receive, we transfer. We look at the conditions, whether it is possible. If not, yes, we'll transfer. But at this point in time, because we find prisoners, inmates all over the country. The last issue that I want to respond to is on the grant flow, 98%, once again, Chairperson. The note that I have here, and I hope that it's the real information, is that it's being handed over today. The delay in the 2% was because of the laundry. that was included and had not been completed appropriately. If that's the case, we'll come back to you in writing to confirm this. But I would like to put it on record that they say it is ready. The delay was on the laundry that needed to be able to comply with certain standards, and therefore we should be closing this matter. Thanks, Chair.
Yeah, a remark first and then I've got four questions, Chair. Thanks. I just want to comment on the National Commissioner's input or response with regard to the education needs in our communities. That is true. In my previous life as MEC, I've identified those ignorance in amongst the people. And I had a very wonderful relationship with your ARC here, Justice Department, NPA, and then the police. And in my oversight meetings, I've had all those government departments on stage, each and every one a 10-minute input. What is your need? Like, what is parole? You know, all these things. What is bail? The people think bail is punishment. You understand? And parole and all these things. And what needs to be done and what is expected of the community, you know, to report if they observe whatever. What is the channel they have? And it works wonderful. It works wonderful. The other point I've got here is in your annual plan, which we dealt with yesterday, at page 85, you mentioned the last paragraph, gang management strategy completed and is being operationalized. Then if you read what is said there and you go back to your presentation, Ms. Schreiner, on your slide number 15, where is it now? The gang unit. Yes, that's right, yeah, gang management. Then you say your actual performance, target achieved, consultation in process. Now, what is the real status now? I want to know what is the real status. Your annual plan says finalized, implemented. Other one says consultation. Then at your slide number 22, with regards to your percentage of inmates who are CD4 count below 350, who are on ARV treatment, you set a quarterly target of 80%. Now my question is, how do you determine that particular target? You know, because it's a self-inflicted illness. How did you come about to set a target of 80%? I just want to have an understanding. The next question is your victim involvement on slide 29. And that is, you didn't reach your target in cases where victims of criminal make representations. What is the problems which you people experience with regards to that? And the last one, Chair, is the consideration of lifers at your slide 31. How many of those who's been considered now, I think it's 304, say at the end of June 2011, region submitted 304 cases of lifers which considered by the minister. Only 86 are outstanding. Now, how many of those considerations were successful, if any? Thank you, Chair.
Chairperson, let me start with the gang management strategy. We need to draw a clear distinction between the gang management strategy, which is your overall framework for managing gangs, down managing them out, getting rid of them, and the establishment of a gang management unit. So this, what we're reporting on here is the establishment of a gang management unit. So it's actually a capacity within the department that will ensure that that gang management strategy that we developed last year really hits the ground at center level and is, or management area level, and is able to be driven. So it's perfectly consistent. We've developed the strategy last year. We're now saying let's look at developing the capacity to be able to effectively deliver and monitor the compliance with that gang management strategy. And that's the consultation process that's going on. It's the overall strategy we did last year. That's the capacity to be able to implement the units. what we're dealing with this year is developing those units. And so that consultation process has started.
Thank you, Chairperson. The honourable member says it is self-inflicted. Some people get it from others and they might not have asked for it, but they are positive anyway. The target of 80%, yes, ideally, if people are having a city for count below 350, all of them must be put on ARVs. But there is no treatment that is mandatory. If I don't want to take the treatment, there's no law that says anybody can force me. So we're also protecting ourselves as a department to say, if we set a target of 100% and then somebody doesn't take the treatment, how then do we account for that? But ideally, everybody that is below 350 must take the treatment, and that is what we recommend. Sadly, there has been unofficial reports that other people deliberately do not take the treatment because they want to be sick, they want to deteriorate, therefore possibility of medical parole and all those things. But those are unofficial reports that you can't say Jolingana is refusing to take treatment because she wants to deteriorate. So we're putting that target because also, according to the guidelines, you can't put a 100% target. You have to put a target that would assist to also to build up in the future, yes. Yes, it depends on the cooperation of the inmate, just like any other patient in the community out there. If a person doesn't want to take treatment, you can't enforce it. So we put in the target also to protect ourselves.
Chairperson, with regards to victim involvement in parole boards, I think we have observed that there is no, you know, though there is, you know, gradual increase of victim involvement in parole boards, but we are still experiencing problem in locating or location of victims. And I think the problem is what we have just talked about earlier on, that, you know, because our community as a whole is not educated about, you know, DCS activities, be it parole or community corrections. So, but currently we are working with the Department of Social Development as the lead department in a victim empowerment strategy as a whole. So we have therefore developed, you know, a victim database register that will assist us to, you know, to be able to track, you know, those victims. But we are also... we have also signed a memorandum of understanding with one non-governmental organization in the community that is actually going to assist us in tracking the victims so that, you know, we start, you know, involve our victims in parole boards. But remember that victim involvement should actually not only, you know, be seen or realized only at parole boards, but it's a process that should start from admission. And as a department, we are working together with other non-governmental organizations. For an example, in Gauteng, we have Kulisa, which is assisting us, you know, in you know, trying to organize victim offender mediation programs. So this is all what we are actually trying to do as a department to ensure that we have more victim involvement, you know, in all our DCS activities from admission until the parole boards. When it comes to the consideration of lifers, the question that was asked was that how many parole or parole that has been approved so far by the minister. I just want to indicate that I do have a figure, but, you know, if we can just come back to you with the right figure. But, you know, in July, the number that we had, I know that we're talking about the first quarter, but up until July, we had 72 parole that has been approved by the minister. And then the other numbers went into, I think the high number is the further profiles, where the minister wants to know exactly as to, you know, whether the this person has, you know, the minister has decided that there is a need for the person to be involved maybe in more programs, or we also confirm a positive support system for those lifers.
Them, and you can pre-warn your colleagues. The first one is on slide 5. If we go to slide 5, we talked about percentages of filling financial posts. We've asked for internal audit. We just want to know, are we talking about internal audit there as well, in terms of those vacancies? Or somebody must come and tell us, or people should be aware that we are concerned about vacancies in the internal audit as well, and hopefully when we talk to people tomorrow, we will deal with that. On slide...
Tomorrow?
No, not tomorrow, next week. Yeah, you can come tomorrow if you want. Just a question that I don't know if we're going to have this opportunity, but it's been raised, and it's also a grey area in my mind. We keep on talking about 10 dedicated remand detention centres. It's been asked by stakeholders, and I don't know that we are very clear on it. Are you guys talking about physically identifying a building that will be an awaiting trial facility somewhere new, or are you saying you'll go to Sun City and then demarcate this area? Somebody needs to clarify what is it exactly that you mean when you talk about your 10. I know at some point we should talk about 10 dedicated facilities. There seems to be a grey area on that one. You don't have to answer it now. If you can, in your rounding up, you can answer it, but we're not too worried about that. And then your slide number 8, and I suppose we'll deal with this one when we deal with the consultants again. You speak about slide number 8, you talk about HDIs, I think it is. It's slide 8, yeah. 80% awarded. I think what we need from you is an honest view on the capacity. It's no use saying we're going to have 80% HDI. We went to Amtata, and your officials in Amtata said the problem is there were HDIs appointed to fix up the drainage. These guys didn't even have machines to fix up the drainages in Amtata. So we don't want you to have an 80% HDI just for the sake of HDI, but they're unable to fulfill the work because they don't have capacity and so on. So we need you to come back and say to us, what are your quality checks for capacity in terms of these HDIs? It shouldn't just be HDIs for the sake of HDIs. And then on slide number 10, when your guys for legal come, over and above the other obvious ones, let me remind you, I put my head on the block, I think it was in V226, I said that if we lose the battle with... some of that food company, remember it was? It was the Posasa or something. It was, if we lose that battle, Sizomgosha, the legal aid. I think some of you were there. That I said we're going to fire. Was it in this room or V226 or somewhere? We haven't forgotten that. But when your guys come, you've won 10 out of the 8 on slide number 10. Can somebody come and tell us what are those two? All right. What are those two that we've lost and the implications to the department? You don't have to respond to it now, but I'm saying that's why we've asked legal to come here. Slide number 13, you talk about, and I think we are supporting it, Ms. Reiner, the positive image. Our concern, or my concern, and I'm sure my colleagues will share it with me, is that sometimes we think that the advertising is excessive. Sometimes you think the advertising, you'll get the Sunday Times, the full page. In fact, if you look at your financials this year, I was going to raise it yesterday if I was in a bad mood, but I was in a good mood yesterday, so I didn't raise it. Let me just tell you. So whilst we agree, what we are saying is it shouldn't be a blank check, ladies and gentlemen. If you look at advertising, for instance, on your page 164, you don't have to look at it, but it moved from 5 million to 60 million rand. And I suspect part of it are these image building exercises. So whilst we agree, you can't go overboard. But just look at your goods and services. Advertising was 15 million from 5 million. Communications cost, I think you had on your slide 13. Then on slide 13 again, I'm surprised Mr. South never asked this question. Number of stakeholders accredited. You know, we and I'm also asking the question, who? We've taken a conscious decision that we get lobbied every day. You know, and it'll come to me and I'll give it to Cindy, and Cindy will have a standard response to the service provider and say it's inappropriate for us to take the decision. However, we'll forward it on to the department. Mr. Self will say, look, we know somebody that can do the job, but he seems to, or she seems to be frustrated because of the department. If you guys could come and tell us exactly, Jenny, you spoke about you now have a database and you have all those type of things. What do you want us to do? When somebody comes and says there's a need out there to train people how to do X, Y, and Z, here am I can do it. What is it that you want us to do? As up to now, it will come to me, I'll forward it to Cindy, and Cindy will send it to whoever, Zama Zama, and hope that somebody gets it, that it's relevant. If you guys could tell us what you think the process is, so that if there are blockages, we are able to, because people come to us and say, look, these guys in the department don't want to take our services. So if somebody can talk about that, not today, but I'm just saying it's something that you would need to take into account. Slide 16, you have a target for electronic access, and we've been fighting with this the whole of last year, that all 75 will be up and running. You've only got 28 of 75. Maybe somebody must come and explain to us today or in the future, what is the difficulty there? You know, our major gripe is we can't have handcuffs being used to secure these gates wherever we go, Durban Westville being a case in point. And then the final one, and that's one I think we'd also deal with when we deal with consultants, if I understood it correctly, Commissioner, is number of food service units type of thing. Please explain what that is to us, and let me just put it up front to you. In our oversight visit, Commissioner, we don't understand why when you go to Amtata, inmates cook for themselves. You go to the rural areas, inmates cook for themselves. But you go to Durban, you go to Joburg, Bosasa cooks for them. Is this what we're talking about here when we say food distribution? We don't understand why this food distribution happens in areas where we thought it should not be happening, because I would have imagined that Joburg and Durban and those places should have all the facilities. The ones that shouldn't have the facilities would be the rural ones. However, we find that the Bosasas of this world are working in those areas and not in the rural areas. So we'll deal with it under consultants, but if you guys can explain what this food distribution service readiness assessment tool means. Those are the areas that I thought I'd want to just highlight for you. In your responses as you go on, you can respond to them. Otherwise, it's not urgent. If we can hand over to you, Ms. Mareka. Oh, if you want to does somebody want to respond very briefly? It is 12:15, and we still have Ms. Mareka, and we want to deal with that. But if you want to respond very briefly, we don't need responses, but if you want to, we'd allow you to.
Chairperson, a lot of these we will either put in writing or we organize a full presentation, but I think the one that we can just very quickly deal with is the dedicated remand detention facilities. Indeed, when we're talking about a dedicated remand detention facility, it is a facility that only accommodates remand detainees. As, for example, Pretoria Local only deals with remand detainees. In other centres, we have a section which is remand detention and a section which is for offenders. But ideally, particularly in the areas where we've got sizable remand detainee offender populations, we want to get to a point at which those facilities are dedicated, because the dynamics of a remand detention facility and the dynamics of a correctional centre are markedly different.
All right. Please, that's the one where you have
allocated a vote of 16.559 billion. At the end of June, we spent 3.5 billion. And the percentage that we spent was 21.31%. The 21.31% is lower than what we had anticipated to spend by the first quarter. We, in terms of our spending plan that we prepared and submitted to National Treasury, we had anticipated that we spend 23.96%, which constitutes 3.968 billion of the voted funds. There are factors that contributed to us not being able to achieve the set target of 3.968 billion. In terms of the program, on program administration, mainly the causes for the under expenditure is on compensation of employees. We still had funded posts that were not filled by the end of this quarter. And on goods and services, mainly it was the CETA accounts that were still not yet finalized by the end of the first quarter. As much as we have budgeted and we own CETA and services have been rendered, but the actual payments to CETA did not flow as planned. On program security, mainly there again the cause for the under expenditure is the non-filling of funded posts under that particular program security. And that also applies to program corrections. We spend 360 million against 382 million that we had planned to spend, also due to the non-filling of funded posts. Program care, the main causes over and above the non-filling of posts, funded posts, there's a small amount of EOSD for psychologists that was supposed to have flown first quarter, but it had not yet flown in the first quarter. At that stage, there was a delay on the resolution to implement that particular OSD. And on goods and services mainly, it is the low movement of internal charges to clear that on items that already have been consumed in the first quarter. But what we found is that people did not clear those internal charges so as to be able to fully account for the expenditure under program care. On program development, also compensation of employees, non-filling of posts, and we had a low expenditure on the workshop and agricultural materials, because also in program care we do buy raw materials and those are processed, and we do a spend on agricultural materials as well. We saw a low movement of expenditure on those main two items. On program social reintegration, mainly it is the non-filling of funded posts. On program 7, which is the program facilities, our main cause of under expenditure continued to be the low billing from public works. I need to explain, Chairperson, that when it comes to the capital works program, both the capital projects and the maintenance for projects that are run by the Department of Public Works under that Capital Works program. In terms of projections, when we do the spending plan around last quarter of a financial year, preparing for the new financial year, on those specific items, we engage the Department of Public Works for them to actually give us the projections for the year to say how much is it that they are going to be spending, actual spend in terms of the work in progress, of projects, and also in terms of the new capital projects and planned maintenance. And the projections would come from them to say that for the next financial year, from April, on a monthly basis, they give us the cash flow projections monthly, they will spend this much. So the expectation from ourselves is that as a particular month, we'll be more or less be able to get the bills in line with the projected expenditure. Because we submit that, to consolidate that with our own spending plans, and then submit that in line with the PFMA to National Treasury around the end of February to plan for the revenue and the expenditure for the following year. But we had huge challenges. I mean, all these years we've been having challenges, but this year it has been worse in terms of the actual expenditure on capital works program. Month of April, you had nothing. There would be meetings, there would be promises and all of those things. There was
also an engagement where we actually said, maybe review your projections, because it doesn't help us to have projections and the bills don't, because it's a huge amount of money. So at the end, they become significant in terms of the other expenditure of the department. And even that process didn't give us joy. We had to even kind of engage National Treasury on that aspect, but there would be delays in actually getting the review of the projections. Hence, the kind of engagement, as we indicated yesterday, chairperson of IDT, which is the Treasury 2 entity in terms of the PFMA. IDT has given us the projections in terms of what is it that they will be or they can spend in terms of the capital project. It's not that there won't be any projects that are going to be run by the Department of Public Works, but in terms of other projects, capital projects that are urgent, that are necessary, some of them will go then to IDT, because we are anticipating that there would be kind of a fast tracking of delivery of projects and also coupled with the actual expenditure of those. There is a draft memorandum that we have engaged them on. It has gone through the all processes, being consulted with finance and legal services, both parties. And my understanding is that then now it is en route to be signed by both parties. So we are hopeful that once that has been signed, then there would be a better spending. It's the first time that SDCS will be using IDT, but there are other government departments that have used them. We've consulted with them in terms of getting a sense and some form of comfort of whether there is qualitative delivery of projects followed by actual expenditure as planned, and the feedback that we're receiving from those departments has been positive. But we have ensured that within the MOA, we do comply to the prescripts, especially the public finance management, as in terms of the PFMA, around the internal control system, and also around the assurance that they must give the accounting officer before we do the transfer payments. And we also engage National Treasury in that regard. In terms of the GFS, on compensation of employees, which is slide 5, we had planned that we're going to spend 23.59%. We actually spent 22.14%, mainly, as I've indicated, around all programs, the facilities. It is due to the funded vacancies that were not filled as planned. And secondly, it is the general salary adjustment, the improvement in conditions of service. For 10-11, government agreed with organized labor that the improvement in conditions of service, instead of being paid from July of every year, for this year it will be May, to start from May, and then next year, 2012-13, it will be from April, which is now starting. We're trying to align the two processes in terms of the general improvement of conditions of service and the financial year. So at the end of first quarter, the process of finalizing the agreement between the two parties was not yet finalized. It was finalized in the second quarter, and the actual flow, money flow, will see it in the second quarter, because immediately it was finalized and it was implemented in the month of September. So when we come for the second quarter on goods and services, then we can only report other causes of not spending our compensation budget as planned, save the general salary adjustments for members. And that indicated also under K, the small amount for all people psychologists, and also that I will see the money flow in the second quarter. Around goods and services, as I've indicated, CETA payments did not flow as anticipated. Therefore, indicated yesterday, there were interactions with CETA, and also the IT unit in the department in terms of ensuring that we finalize the SLAs and ensure that those SLAs have got penalty clauses. But also at the department, we had bills, a backlog of bills that were due to CETA. We've received the services, we've received the bills. By end of the financial year, they were not processed. So those we agreed with CETA. We put some targets to say that, okay, fine, give us the statements. We'll have to reconcile, ensure that whatever we'll be paying you is due and payable. We began to actually see a huge chunk flowing only in the second quarter, because we were able to pay about 80 million, that is now in the second quarter, by the second quarter, and about 9 million of invoices that were received from CETA were under dispute. We had questions on whether the goods were actually, or services were rendered, and or else the rates that were charged. charge and the amounts that we charge, and we had agreed with them that what is due and payable we will pay, but whatever is under dispute first, we will then try to ensure that we're on the same page, and if it is not payable, we're not going to pay just because it has been invoiced to the department, but then CETA will have to issue credit notes. There are some that they passed, credit notes to the department, but we're expecting that in second, third quarter, a lot of the 9 million would have been finalized in terms of clearing those disputes and passing of credit notes. If dispute has been resolved and we owe CETA, then we'll pay those amounts to CETA. In terms of transfer payments, we had a revised spending plan of 18.64%, and we actually spent 50% of that. We have reviewed that in the second quarter to have, in line with the Share Regulations Chapter 6, to have a requirement from compensation of employees to transfer payments in terms of the exit packages of members that naturally leave the department, either by resignation or retirement or death. So that one is made good in the second quarter. In terms of payments for capital assets, as I've indicated, that the main under expenditure was we actually spent 8% in the first quarter against 24.12% that we spent by the end of the first quarter. And another part that we had problems with that I forgot Chairperson to mention, but though it's in the slide on goods and services, is the whole issue of consumables. Consumables from DPW. If you remember last year, we did indicate that public works used to kind of budget and get the money appropriated under their vote for consumables, so they would just fully incur the cost and do everything. But then sometime last year, they wrote departments to say that they will no longer carry the consumables from their own vote. We need to budget for that. We did engage National Treasury. We submitted MTSBs to Treasury to be able to get funds for paying ourselves for consumables. Even on that one, we requested public works on the actual expenditure that we're incurring as a historical trend, together with projections that they so that they can be able to assist us to properly reflect those projections in our own budget. We had 69 million set aside for consumables, but the billing also is still a problem because they are still carrying the work, but do a build back like they're doing for the capital works project. It's an issue that we've raised with them. And in fact, last year, as much as they had said that we must pay for all consumables, they didn't pay us anything. They spent, because consumables were there in our centers, but there was no flow of payments from the department. So we are indicating, Chairperson, from slide 6 and 7, the expenditure in figures per program. Starting from program administration, but against a budget of 4.4 billion, we had actually spent 1 billion against the spending plan of 1.084, indicating also the percentage of the spending plan. Because across all programs is a trend, not a single program where we have been able to perform against what we've targeted. So for all programs, from program administration to program facilities, all programs have underperformed in terms of actual expenditure in the first quarter. I think the glaring one is care facilities and development. And care and development mainly because of the materials and the charges and facilities mainly because of the billing and the low actual bills that we receive against the spending vendors we receive that from the Department of Public Works. I will actually end the session.
Thank you very much. Nemu Bada, you see that young lady sitting by herself there, is my secretary. Going forward, she's going to stand at the door of the box. No cell phones will be allowed inside here. She's going to take a register. Take your cell phone number, your cell phone color, you'll put it in the box there, because I don't understand why it's so difficult for any of us to put our cell phones off. Especially if Cindy's recording, it messes up our transcripts, madam. So we don't want to get to a situation where we treat it like small children, but it really messes up our minute-taking process. Let's take Mr. Self, and then Advocate Max, and then Self, and then Mam Gwenya. half past, we're going to allow you until 1:45 so that the department can respond. The National Commissioner also wants to have closing remarks. Meneer Saab.
Thank you very much, Chair. I just have one question. I mean, it's a topic that we always raise, and it's the relationship between yourselves and Public Works and the very, very unsatisfactory situation that has on your accounts. And it's one thing dealing with this on a very high-level basis, which is appropriate for this committee. But I just want to tell you one case which is on my desk at the moment. It concerns an HDI contractor who is a subcontractor working at Brunflay. And this man hasn't been paid by the contractor, because the contractor hasn't been paid by the department, the department hasn't been paid by Public Works, and this man's now had to sell his car and sell his house. Now, there's a big problem. And I know we've had both departments together, and I know we were going to have a memorandum of understanding and a service level agreement and God knows what else, but it doesn't seem to be getting any better. And I just want to know what we can do on a political level to fix it.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, I've got only two questions. I want to know, Chair, that how much was budgeted for advertising position and advertising position, how much? Yes.
Okay.
And how many positions are advertised? And when will be the department fill this position that are vacant? Lastly, Chair. On Tuesday, the Audit General indicated that the department does not provide information on time when doing their audit. I want to know, Chair, that what is the reason of that? Thank you.
There's not very many. Let me add mine so that you can respond collectively. Maybe as a suggestion, and you must shoot it down if you feel so, on the first point that Mr. Self made, I had noted it, Mr. Self. I think I'm going to write a letter to Minister of Finance and Minister of DPSA, because I think DPSA is where CETA resides, indicating that invoices later than 45 days or whatever the case might be will not be acceptable to this committee anymore, for the very reasons Mr. Self raised. So in your response, you must tell us what is acceptable. Because if they come back and they say the reason why they don't bill is because you don't do whatever on time, the pressure is going to come on you. But really, government's position is that 30 days afterwards, all HDIs and whatever you call them must be paid. That's government policy. Now it is, Mr. Self, for somebody losing his house and his job, and we continuously get the argument that we're not being billed on time by CETA and by whoever. Commissioner, can you, we're seeing your IT department next week. Can by next week somebody come and say to us, what is a ideal time? So that you don't put yourself under unnecessary pressure, but we are going to write to the Minister of Finance. We are going to write to the Minister of DPSA saying, consistently the underspending in our department is because of late billing. One, it has an impact just on our own service delivery, but secondly, it has a direct impact on the service providers. So we'd need you to come with what you think is an ideal time frame, because unless we put political pressure, it's not going to happen. And I'm suggesting that that's what you do, Mr. Self. If you guys think that it's not the way to go, you need to indicate that to us. My two that I wanted to raise was the... We said when we started here that... We're going to monitor the monthly actual versus budget. That is why the billing and the clearing. The billing is the one thing externally, but somebody spoke about clearing, which is your own story. So you need to go back and make sure that your clearing process is done so that your monthly management accounts are a truer reflection than what they are. Don't come here and say to us, we are behind because we haven't done internal clearing. When we do our monthly monitoring of actual versus budget, we will deal with the external ones if you, the guys, think it's the way to go. Internal ones is entirely up to you. The one concern I have is on slide 5, if I can just find it. We seem to, I'm understanding you to be saying that there has been a unforeseen spike in termination cost, if we can call it that way, and that it will be funded from the compensation of employees. So my understanding is you are saying that money that we had targeted for employees might be used to subsidize this retirement story, which means you're not going to be able to fill those vacancies, which means Mamgwenya's question is going to be raised again. I'm arguing that let's not use money that is supposed to employ people to pay people's termination on the other side, because you will not have money for that. We are saying the employment, we've been saying it over and over again, is a priority in your case. If you must pay for this undue, and also it doesn't make sense, Ms. Mareka, because if you're using money that you are targeted for employing to pay and satisfy those that are leaving, you're not going to be able to fill the gap of those that have left, because you're paying for them to get out of the system, but you're not going to have money to give somebody that comes in. So our reduction of staff numbers is just going to get more. I'm just saying you guys must find another balance of it. I'd much rather you take money from the PPPs, because you are still debating about it, but do not affect our ability to employ new staff members. Deal with that. Is just my concern around that one, unless I've misunderstood what your slide is saying. But if you could respond to those questions, we'll then allow the National Commissioner to do the closing afterwards. But really, it is just those three or four questions that you can respond to. Anybody in any order? Or you want us to remind you again? You've got them. Yes, fine, thanks.
Thanks, Chairperson. I think on the first one that has been asked by the Honourable Member, Mr. Self, on what can be done. But it does become difficult when the other department does the processes, but the budget is sitting in another accounting officer. Operations, everything else, procurement, everything. From actual designing, planning, we just inform them we want a facility. They take the rest up until paying the contractors. We're not in control, to be honest with you, let alone that the money is sitting with us. What we get on a monthly basis would be then what we call PACE documents, where they are indicating we are how far with this project and therefore pay us so much. But that one, we sit down, reconciling all of that and what is due and payable to them in terms of refunding them, we then pay. The issue then becomes how far then is public works accountable on what they are delivering on behalf of DCS accounting officer. Because you've got another accounting officer sitting there having the mandate to implement, another accounting officer just having the money part. Then I think for me what becomes important probably would be some form of, when it comes to capital works program, I'm not talking only DCS, but generally, because that problem is there in all these departments that we are using in public works. Some form of joint accountability when it comes to capital works program, so that as much as we agree with our projects, let's be accountable on issues that commissioner would have direct control over, and let the accounting officer of public works come in account to all oversight bodies on issues that are directly in his control, so that at the end of the day, we are one government, we agree, but at least there's a fuller picture of what exactly is the problem. Correctly said, Chairperson, there is even a cabinet resolution on paying service providers within 30 days. There's the treasury regulations, and there's even a court order that says if departments don't pay service providers within the agreed term frame, then those service providers can even attach government property. We can monitor SDCS, our own service providers. But we don't even know who has been paid, who has not been paid by GPW, and it does become difficult. Money is there. Not that money is not there. Money is there, but we're not able to say there is one service provider in Lusaka City who has not been paid, and let's therefore try and ensure that we pay that service provider. We are able in the department to draw reports and say who Have we paid within 30 days? We report by exception because we must pay everyone within 30 days or whatever agreed period. If we're supposed to pay quarterly, let's pay you quarterly. We're able to draw and have an oversight and cause people to account to say you were supposed to pay everyone within 30 days. The following service providers within your area of responsibility have not been paid within 30 days. Indicate to us as CFO what is it that led to that. Because generally, you might have instances whereby you are not in a position to pay, but the service provider has not fulfilled the obligations that the service provider must fulfill. But number two, if you did not have a reason not to pay, indicate what is it that you're putting in place to correct it so that it doesn't recur in future. We have seen a downward trend as PCS in terms of those service providers that are directly in control over by introducing that monitoring mechanism on a monthly basis to responsibility managers. But unfortunately, when it comes to service providers, the public was not even able to report in terms of these contracts how many have gone to HDIs, how many. Those are just a big account to process, and it kind of ends there. But to be honest, I think for me, and we don't see anywhere where public works comes and accounts jointly with us to say this is how far we've gone, portfolio committee, or any other oversight structure in terms of what is within that direct control. For us, probably that's subject to commissioner's views on this matter. It might help, and it might go a long way so that at least there's some improvement of how we treat the service providers and there's some improvement of actually being able to account. Maybe there are genuine reasons why people are, or why projects are delayed. We might not have reasons why we're not paying service providers. People are paid according to the work done. Even if it's a 24-month project or 36-month project, once you've finalized, done 5% of work, then let money flow for that 5% amount of work that we've done. Maybe that's one part that at a political level that we may get some assistance, a form of accountability, joint. We're not saying let them come alone. Let them come with us. Let's account on our part. Let them account on their part. On the issue of advertising line item, I do not have the details with me except if we've got. We can come back and actually indicate this is the actual amount we have budgeted for advertising of filling of vacancies. And also, how many posts have we advertised from the beginning of the financial year? And out of those advertised posts, how many, maybe the whole recruitment process status, how many have been cross-listed, shortlisted, interviewed, assumption of duties? Maybe that's part of the report from CDC Corporate Services. In terms of AG having reported that they do request information and we do not respond in time, it is true. We have every year before the audit starts, during the planning, there's an audit strategy for the following year that is developed, and that strategy is agreed between the two parties, the department and AG. It goes to audit steering committee to be endorsed there before it even goes to audit committee for final endorsement. We agree on timelines. There's a service kind of level standards that we agree on to say, if you give me a request for information, then within 2 days I must give you the information. If you give me a communication, which is an audit query, then within 5 days I must have responded. If you give me a management report, then within 7 days, working days, I must have responded to you. So those are cleared and agreed upon jointly. But during the execution, and I'm not going to say it's only at lower levels, it starts from the top, from head office, we experience those problems. But we do have a NEV that coordinates the audit process, which is the branch of CFO, where all information requested by AG comes to branch CFO, as much as it goes to the relevant unit. If it is a query or request for information for operations and management support, an original goes to Mrs. Strana's unit, a copy goes to us for us to be able to create a database of all information AG has requested and the timeline that must be met and whether people have met those timelines. We then, the arrangement we have with AG is to say when a response has not been received within the set timeline, then that is elevated, normally starting at my office, then to CFO, for us to be able to engage the relevant units to submit the information. And if maybe there's no clarity, then we're able then to reroute it, because sometimes we did pick up that they're sent to the wrong person, then we're able then to say, no, this one must be sent to that particular you find that unnecessarily a request that should have taken 5 days ends up taking maybe 3 weeks. It has happened. We have indicated also to AG that it does become dual boss. What we have picked up as much as what we have interested, as I was to say, rather than people responding only to AG, we need a copy of the response that has been sent to AG, electronic and in print, so that we are able then to say, okay, fine, Mareka has responded within 3 days instead of 2 days, and the response, was it qualitative or not qualitative? Because some people would respond and find that it is not a relevant response. But it is something that we have tried to actually even say, maybe let's elevate the sign-off of these responses to a managerial level, not at a lower level. In other words, queries don't go to people below directors, and the responses don't come from officials below directors. People operational level can prepare those, but a director, at least minimum level, should sign off the response so that we ensure that there's ownership and quality and accountability. But it's an area that I do agree we have fallen short of. We're trying to improve, and in most of our post-mortems together with AG, in what is it that are the main causes, we've tried to try and see if we can't maybe enhance the communication between the parties and ensuring that when people are not clear what is it that they must submit to AG, they elevate that quickly within the Senate. And if we're not able to provide the information within 3 days or 5 days of the grant, request an extension to AG and say, AG, the amount of information we have requested, it warrants me to consult centers, and therefore I need 7 days instead of 3 days. Because normally in those instances, AG has never said no. They would understand. But it's an area that we need to improve on, I fully agree, Mamungwe. Around the GPS sitter issue, I fully agree with the chairperson, but the commissioner, I think, could also maybe comment on this one. But I think it will be better also during the next week's interaction when we do come with whatever timelines that might be reasonable in terms of visitors, we need to say, no, instead of whatever, within, if it's 45 days kind of old, it's not acceptable. The most acceptable is maybe 15 days old. But on a cost recovery basis, probably we might even say, okay, fine, so long as you can certify that you've paid the service providers within 20 days or 30 days, you're 45 days old, might be acceptable. I'm saying we need an informed, probably, engagement from the relevant unit in that regard. I think the one of internal charges, I fully agree, it's us who must clear those internal charges and ensure that whatever people have consumed, taken from workshops, from raw materials, or from the warehouses in terms of the food supplies, that expenditure, those who consumed the goods or the item, should actually be within the month of consumption. We need to have reflected the expenditure. It might help us also the closer monitoring, because we're not improving for now in terms of the actual expenditure. On transfer payments, Chairperson, we, as much as we do kind of focus on the exit of employees, we do try to be very conservative on the actual, I'm not talking about other transfer payments, but transfer payments in relation to the natural attrition. We do try to be very conservative there, because in terms of the PFMA, when we have put or allocations under transfer payments, you cannot, even if now people are no longer leaving the department in the manner that we have anticipated, that money is locked, you can't do anything. And PFMA travel regulations allow that for only the natural attrition, but it's all compensation of employees, it's transferred to households, it's transferred, I'm getting my leave gratuity as I'm exiting. It does allow that in an instance whereby your projections in terms of your people leaving you fall short under transfer payment, you can therefore go and take money from compensation of employees, because it's all about employees, and then the environment can go to transfer payments. So we do kind of become very conservative and ensure that at least there will always be some fat in terms of, yes, we've budgeted this amount with allowances, and normally if I leave today, the post won't be filled tomorrow. There's always a time lag between myself exiting the department, say end of October, and the process of recruitment. So the conservativeness comes from that aspect, that if it's under transfer payment, it's locked. You will never violate that. It will just remain there unspent for the rest of the financial year. So we do try to ensure that let's not probably lock too much. Let's lock what is very predictable in terms of actual retirement, but death cases does sometimes become very difficult to, and resignations as well, to project. We become very lean there on projecting for those main two components, so as to be able to have some room if people don't resign, as we've anticipated, to go and take. But we, what we have agreed also within the department is that maybe the kind of exit, what do they call it, survey, when people exit the department, interview, yes, the exit interviews, might also help us to plan better. So that we know why people, I'm not talking about normal retirements and death cases, but the resignations, why people leave the department, so that we have a holistic approach in planning, and also that will result in us planning better on this item when it comes to the exit of people within the department.
Thanks, Chairperson. There are quite a number of questions around human resources, but like you said, we'll provide the full breakdown of who is going to be appointed by when. But I just wanted to assure the members that we are working quite closely with the CFO as corporate services, especially around the structure for the internal audit and the internal control and compliance. Now that the DC employee internal control and compliance has been appointed, we are working on her structure to actually man the section, the chief directorate. We are busy with the job evaluations for the directors that will be working with her in the chief directorate. And just to give a bit of background as well, we on Tuesday we're sitting to interview the DC internal audit. This Tuesday. So there is progress, and we are definitely prioritizing finance and internal audit and internal control and compliance in the post that we are advertising. We have also prioritized the filling of the RC post. The date has been set for the interviews for the RCs that have been vacant. Thank you, Chairperson. We just need to share a bit of our concern as corporate services that we inherited HR that is unprofessional. So some of the challenges that we have are challenges related to the fact that we don't have trained HR practitioners. So the people that we're working with are essentially workers that have gone up in the ranks. And we've prioritized the professionalization of HR in the department. You were talking about us outsourcing the department, but there are issues that we need to outsource for us to actually get over the hump, because currently we've got a lot of backlogs around the recruitment. We're supposed to be, our target for this year is 1,500 people that we're supposed to appoint. But the challenge that we have is that we are losing 100 people every month. So while it's like a leaking bucket, while we are busy recruiting people, promoting from inside, which is absolutely recycling, we also have to bring a balance between the number of people that we bring from outside and the number that we promote from inside. We thought we really needed to share that as corporate services, because it actually changes the complexion of the whole thing, so that we are not seen as people that are just sitting and not really knowing what we need to do. We are busy with the succession plan, because we are aware that we've got such challenges. You, Chairperson, actually talked about us having a very robust recruitment and retention strategy. We're looking at all those things to address the current challenges that we have as HR. We've also prioritized IT, because that's where that is our weak point as well. We have advertised a lot of positions in terms of IT, and we've filled quite aggressively. I also wanted to share with the with the portfolio committee that we are we've got a temporary we've got plans, short term plans and long term plans. In terms of recruitment, we are going to outsource the bid so that we are able to go over the hump, and then we'll get rid of the person that will assist, that will be assisting us with this 1.5, and we'll then do our own part. The portfolio committee should also understand where we come from as corporate services. Looking at the Jalo Commission and all the things that we talked about around the recruitment, we've had to tighten, and that has actually hit us. It has actually come back to bite us in the tail, in the sense that we've got a long route list to actually ensure that our recruitment and appointment processes are fair. You find that it has to go through a number of people, but we are reviewing all those things and reviewing the HR delegations so that some of the work that was centralized at head office will then be decentralized. At the same time, we are looking at the job descriptions that have got to be standardized. While we've got a lot of parallel processes to try and address the issues that are bedeviling the progress in corporate services. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. For us, it was an enriching experience, especially in terms of the first quarter report that we have presented to yourselves. And we go back with the fulfillment that some of the issues raised by the members of the Portfolio Committee will help us to have what you call qualitative reporting mechanism. And indeed, we share with you, Chairperson, that there is a need for us to engage very robust with respect to National Treasury and GPSA, with respect to CETA, and also have a discussion around the issues that are affecting us with public works, because it is important for us to be able to know also from a statistical perspective how many HDI companies are benefiting from the construction perspective, how much of the value proposition do we get out of this. But I should think I share, and I should think the Mareka should not have asked me as to whether I concur. It's something that is standard because it affects us in terms of performance as a department sitting with a lot of money, especially on capital and maintenance funds that sit with us. Because if you look at the analysis that has been provided, that is the drawback in terms of our performance. We were hauled back to the portfolio committee, both ourselves and Public Works, on this matter. But we therefore would share the same sentiment with you, Chairperson, that we have nothing to hide. If there are problems within correctional services, those responsible have to take accountability for it. And we've heard very clearly from finance that they welcome. I should think that's why they should have said they welcome this engagement with public works, so that we should be able to clear the air and move forward. We're looking forward to this interaction with yourself, and we'd like to thank the portfolio committee for engaging us in the robust manner, with a view that we have a department that is compliant. Thank you very much, Chairperson.
Thank you very much. Finally, we did indicate yesterday that we are not fussy about who comes with the people we're inviting, but after your input, ma'am, somebody from your office has to come. I know you'll be busy interviewing, but somebody from your office has to come, and I'll tell you why. We don't want IT to be saying to us, we want to go ahead, but it's corporate services that are not doing what they need to do. Okay, so you have indicated to us that you're prioritizing it. I'm sure when we talk to internal audit, they'll be saying, we want to go, but your corporate services have got too much bureaucracy. So we need somebody from your office in our meetings on Tuesday and Wednesday. I think it is, Sunday. Yeah. Not yourself, but somebody that will be able to defend what you've said, because we will raise it on Tuesday and Wednesday. Thank you very much. Commissioner and your team, I think it was helpful for us. We will use this and our engagements tomorrow, and I mean Tuesday and Wednesday, and then have a report. And of course, if there's need for us to fine-tune and ask questions over and above what we've asked now, through Cindy we will send you correspondent saying, please just answer this question because we will put it in our reports eventually. So thank you very much, and may we all have a good weekend. Thanks. Bye-bye. Meeting adjourned.